presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
X4 calling control tower. The X4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to the X4. In the southeast, heading
westbound there. Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Around the world in Piper Cubs. That's the ambition of two veteran American pilots, and they start from New York this month to fly 21,350 miles around the globe. You all know a Piper Cub when you see one. It's the popular sports plane flown by people of all ages in all parts of the country. The Army uses the Cub as an artillery spotter and as a utility plane to carry officers and communications to locations which are without regular airfields. The Cub can land safely on almost any fairly level surface and take off with a short run. You've probably heard the expression, a Cub can land on a dime, have a nickel change left. However, the advantages of this light plane have never included long range or great speed. These two things are not needed or desired by light plane owners who want to fly after only a few lessons and fly safely. But George Truman, he's no relation to the president, and Cliff Evans are going to prove that Piper Cubs have the endurance necessary for flights of record distance. And they're the first flyers to ever attempt a flight around the world with planes of less than 575 horsepower. By compared to their Cubs, Lindbergh's Spirit of St. Louis was power-packed. He has much more motor power than they'll have, because the Cubs' light engines are rated at 65 horsepower, about the power of an automobile. In a few minutes, I'll tell you more about George Truman and Cliff Evans, the daring young men on the flying puddle jumpers, so don't forget to listen. And now for our story. Confronted with a strange and puzzling mystery which threatens to ruin the Ace Flying Service, a small cargo airline established by Paul Conroy and two other veterans, Bert Craig and Vinnie Stevens, Pop and Tank worked furiously to find the answer to the weird appearance of wartime enemy fighters during airline scheduled flights. In our last episode, they were positive they had a good lead when one of the airline mechanics hurriedly asked them to meet him that night in his room at 21 Washington Street in downtown New Orleans. But when the boys arrived at the appointed time, they found his door ajar. Knocking and getting no answer, they walked in to discover the mechanic had been murdered.
What happened to him?
Strangled.
See the marks on his throat? Gosh, that poor guy.
He knew something, all right. Something too hot to handle.
If only he told us back in the hangar, then this wouldn't have happened.
I was afraid.
Of who?
Somebody who was around. Somebody who must have seen him talking to us. Decided to shut him up for good.
Then it's somebody connected with the airline.
Of course.
Hey, I just remembered something.
What?
He started to talk, and then he stopped. Right after that, the crew chief, Shorty, walked over.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember, Shorty said the stretch was okay. He checked him himself. Maybe he was lying.
Maybe. But Paul seemed to trust him implicitly.
Well, a better chance to do his dirty work.
I'll have to keep an eye on it. Let's see now.
Hey, what are you doing?
Maybe there's something on him. There's his wallet.
Anything in it?
Some money, big bills. That's all. Funny, no identification.
If you don't fancy any, we'd better get out of here. If somebody comes along, there'll be trouble.
I'd like to have a look around first.
Hey, what's that?
The elevator going down. Somebody must have run for it.
Who?
Lieutenant, I suppose. You're right, will you?
Pop, I don't like this. I got butterflies in my stomach. Hurry up, will you?
Okay. Say, you look through that closet.
Come on, we ain't got time.
Go ahead, will you?
Okay. Nothing but clothes. The elevator stopped.
I had to eventually. Nothing on the dresser.
What are you looking for, anyhow?
I don't know.
Oh, great. The elevator's coming back up. Will you please come on?
Yes. Nope, nothing here.
Then let's go, huh?
All right.
What do we do if the elevator stops on this floor and someone sees
it? We'll go down the stairs. Take it easy.
Pop, it is coming to this floor.
All right, down the stairs, but no noise. Tank, I said no noise. All right, fine. Hold it.
It's dark.
What's going on there? This way, Mike.
You see who it is?
Door's open.
It's too close. Jumping journeys. Let's get out of here.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I knew we'd end up in hot water if we stuck around. I told you I had
to. Keep your voice down.
Well, you know what happened, don't you? The guy who knocked off the grease monkey is trying to pin the rap on us. So we tipped off the cops so they'd catch us in his room.
Something else, Hank. Do you remember we heard someone run downstairs when we got out of the elevator?
Oh, yeah.
That was our killer. Watch it. We're getting near the bottom.
Maybe there's another cop waiting down there.
Yeah, let's see. There might be someone posted outside on the street, though.
Well?
No. Only an empty squad car. Let's roll. Much like the killer didn't tell the police there was a murder, there'd be a flock of detectives around.
Well, let's step on it. I don't want to be anywhere near here when they do show up.
So, quickly crossing the street, Hop and Hank duck into the shadows and try desperately to put distance between themselves and 21 Washington Street. A few blocks away, they hail a taxi cab, and within 15 minutes are back at the airport, talking to Paul Conroy and his partner, Bert Craig.
Must have happened only a few minutes before we got there. As a matter of fact, I'm sure we heard the killer running downstairs.
He heard the elevator coming like we did when the cops arrived.
You mean the police know about it already?
Yes, Paul. You see, the killer played cagey. He called them, hoping they'd find us there with the body.
Well, did they?
We beat it the same way he did, down the stairs.
Harrigan, I ask Craig. Did you see the killer?
No. No, as a matter of fact, we thought he was just one of the tenants.
Sure, we didn't even know the grease monkey was knocked off then.
It sure is getting thick, isn't it?
First the enemy fighter, then the broken strap on your ship, and now murder.
Paul, I'm getting scared.
I don't feel so good myself.
Craig.
Yeah?
You said you were going to check on the broken strap. Did you turn up anything?
No, not a thing. Spoke to the ground crew and Shorty, the crew chief.
Yeah, we met him.
He said he was the last man out of the plane and the straps were in perfect condition.
Yes, he told us that, too.
I asked the pilots. They weren't near the ship. I met them later in the lounge, as a matter of fact. Said they'd been there all evening hashing over this business of the enemy fighters.
Are the boys coming back to us?
Well, three of them are, but I had to do some fast talking. Yeah. And have them help us if a zero shows up again.
Will three be enough to handle all your flights?
Well, Vinny's being released from the hospital tonight.
So soon?
Well, he says he's feeling fine.
Besides, he's raising such a stew about being pinned down and dead. They're more than glad to let him go.
And he'll pay some of the price.
Say, Paul, if you get jammed up, me and Hop will go out again for you.
Well, thanks, but I'm afraid we're not going to be jammed up. Look at that pile of wires on the desk. All cancellations.
Oh, really?
It's getting bad, Harrigan. The ships are dropping out left and right. We've lost all our scheduled flights to the Atlantic coast already. Lord knows whom we'll lose next.
We're lucky to have contracts with some of them. At least they can't drop out.
We can't operate on our contracts alone, Paul.
Yeah. Sounds like it's getting plenty rough for you guys.
Yes, it is, Hank. We can't continue like this. And I'll tell you something. If we don't crack the mess by the end of the week, the Ace Flying Service will be out of business.
Paul's voice is grim. And Hop and Tank fully realized that they would have to work fast if they're to save their friend from financial ruin. But where can they start? So many things have happened, all without traceable clues.
Gang, you won't want to miss the gripping climax of today's episode, so stand by. Fellas and girls, how would you like to fly around the world in a Piper Cub? Might be thrilling, all right, but you might get a little nervous when you're headed out over the Atlantic in the kind of plane which usually hops around in its own backyard on weekends. Well, George Truman, a pilot of 19 years' experience, who races motorcycles on the side, and his pal Cliff Evans, a veteran of the Army Air Forces, are out to prove that the puddle-jumping Cubs, as loving pilots call them, can circle the globe. It'll be 45 days or so before they're back, and in the meantime, they'll have more than 21,000 miles of flying to log. Now, don't get the idea that they have special jobs for their historic around-the-world flight, for their Cubs are regular assembly line models with added fuel tanks. That extra gas capacity is the only major change in the planes, and this was necessary because the short-range Cubs without extra tanks could never make the long over-water hauls that George and Cliff must fly. These tanks will carry 138 gallons of gas, all told, including the regular capacity of the Cubs. George and Cliff plan to have a reserve range of almost 800 miles, even when they face their longest nonstop flight, 1,657 miles over water from Japan to Attu in the Aleutians. and the planes will carry more navigational equipment than most Cub owners ever need. Cliff and George will have radio direction finders in addition to their regular sending and receiving transmitters, the famous Sperry gyro compass, and blind flying instruments. But they'll count most of all on the built-in dependability of the Piper Cubs, the staunch little planes that have made flying a national pastime. Gang private flying is becoming more popular every day. Get ready for it, and always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. It is nearly midnight. Hop and Tank are standing in front of the small administration office of the 8th Flying Service, watching one of the giant DC-4 transports being prepared for a scheduled cargo flight north. Paul Conroy comes out of the office and joins him.
Well, I guess she's all ready to go. No more cargo to put aboard.
She's only half full.
Yes, I know it. Since you won't make anything on this trip.
Hey, that isn't the ship Vinny flew in this morning, is it?
No, it's the one you saw in New City. It was flown down this afternoon.
The crew set to go?
Uh-huh. They're inside now, getting weather and flooding course.
How are they feeling?
A little nervous, but they'll be all right.
Hey, where's this load going?
Kansas City. I sure hope there'll be a load coming back.
Kansas City?
They'll have to fly over the same stretch of country where the enemy fighters were seen before.
Well, don't remind them. I don't think the boys realize it yet.
Listen, Paul, let's Hank and me take off.
Like, but you don't have to. They'll be all right.
But I want to go out. I want to see those fighters for myself.
Yeah, how can we do anything to help if we don't know what we're up against?
Well, why don't you go along then?
No, I'd rather be at the controls myself. Come on, Paul, what do you say?
Okay, any way you want to play it.
Swell.
I'll go along too and handle the routine then.
Good. Well, come on, the ship's all ready to go.
All right, I'll tell Bert first.
Hey, Paul.
There he is.
Yes, Bert.
The boys are all set to go. Any last minute instructions?
No, just tell them to relax and take it easy. They're not making this flight.
What?
Tank and I are taking her out, Craig.
Oh, Harrigan, you don't have to. Thanks just the same, but the boys will be okay.
Oh, we'd rather.
Well, Bert, they want to see the enemy planes for themselves. And they missed them last night. Maybe they'll get the chance tonight.
Well, all right, if you say so, Paul.
Now, how about it, then? Shall we get rolling?
All right. Have those maps, Bert.
Sure, here.
Yeah. I'll call you from Kansas City.
Yeah, have a good trip.
Oh, not too good. We want to see them planes, remember?
Oh. Well, take care of yourself.
Don't worry.
Top.
Yeah.
Before we take off, I'm going to check the straps around the cargo.
That's a good idea.
Say, look at that car coming down the apron. Sure is in a hurry.
Yeah, looks like a police car.
It is. I wonder what's up.
There you go. Wait a minute.
Can't be talking about it, huh?
Hold on there.
You don't think...
Hold it, man.
Thought you'd skip town, huh?
Hey, well, wait a minute. You talking to me?
You're doggone right I'm talking to you. Come on.
Well, what do you mean, come on? Let's go, man.
Take it easy, chum. I'll break your arm. Mike, get the big guy.
You bet. Hey, what is this? You ain't got nothing on
you. Nothing but a nice, big, juicy murder, Ralph, and we're all going down to headquarters where you can tell the captain all about it.
Their arms pinned behind them, Hop and Tank are forced into the waiting squad car. So, the killer has finally succeeded in involving the boys in his crime. They now face a charge of murder. For thrills and suspense, don't miss the next episode of The Riddle of the Ghostly Avenger.
Tune in and spy with Hop Harrigan, America's Ace of the Airwaves. Come on, Hop! We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.